Welcome to Cryptic Soup. Tonight's case is the breakdown and dissection of the 2012 Sandy Hook school shooting. Part one will focus a lot on Adam Lanza, the shooter, his life, what he considered his hobbies, and how that brought upon the planning and idea of mass murder. Part two will resume the conversation while talking about the victims, more of what happened the day of the shooting, and how the Sandy Hook shooting was an event that changed the course of schools, gun administrations, and many lives everywhere. I'm Kylie.
And I'm Thina.
And tonight, we have a two-part case to share with you.
Hey guys, welcome back to Cryptic Soup. We had a small hiatus, but now we're back.
COVID's fun.
With a two-parter.
A dupada.
I think last time we had COVID, we came back with a multi-parter too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm engaged.
I'm in a cast. We've had a lot of things happen this past week.
I got engaged and then literally the next day I had COVID.
I got a cast and then I slammed a hammer into my head full force and got a concussion. We've had different things happening to us.
I still have the lovely dry cough, so
we're making it through. We wanted to be able to put out an episode, but Kylie has throat lozenges, so if you hear a small clicking every so often, it is her throat lozenges. We're sorry about that. There's only so much we can edit out and do things. We will try to always edit out us pausing to take sips of our drink. However, it is the beginning of cold and flu season. We have, you know, moments and
moments.
And just we're a little dry throated, so we will be taking sips of our drinks as well as Kylie has just to clear her throat and stuff every so often. We'll try to edit as many as we can out, but just keep in mind.
As Thina is giving the speech, Kylie begins unwrapping throat lozenges and causing a scene already. We are less than 3 minutes into the episode. We are in for a wild ride.
Just do it.
Everything you do makes so much noise.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of, we want to say thank you to everyone that did say congratulations to Kylie for her engagement. Thank you guys. Kylie was at least getting to read and say thanks to everyone while she was dying at home.
Dying, literally. Yeah.
So thanks everyone for all the great, great wishes. Well, on that great, happy note, you want to hear some sad, sad stuff?
No, I don't, but it's fine.
I do have one thing I forgot to tell you. You specifically, Kylie, but anyone in the world that wants to hear it.
Yeah.
I went and saw a movie this weekend.
Uh-huh.
I saw Saltburn. Mm-hmm. And anyone that wants to watch it, I saw Saltburn. I'm not going to tell you guys what it is because it's still in theaters. It hits Amazon Prime, I think, like next week. There's a moment in the movie. If you know what the movie's about, Kylie, I'll tell you on your own. I'm not going to ruin it for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this one scene. There's nothing about blood drinking or anything like that. There's no incest. There's no pedophilia or anything. Don't get weird. But there's this one scene. And before it even started, I looked Margie dead in the eyes and I said, do not Peter Curtin right now. Do not Peter Curtin. And then the fucker Peter Curtin'd me. And I was like, oh, you motherfucker. And he did a Peter Curtin move. And I was like, oh, you motherfucker. So that's all. That's all. That's all I can give you. And if you guys go see the movie or you watch the movie and you want to talk about this one thing in the film, but also just how wild the film is, Saltburn, we can talk about it. The guy from Gran Turismo's in it, but he's a fucking dick in this movie. We can talk about it.
Great guy.
The main guy from Gran Turismo.
Like the kid?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's one of the main characters in this movie, too.
Interesting. He's a good actor.
Yeah. He's great in this, too, but he's a fucking little dick wipe. Moving on, let's Sandy Hook it. Sandy Hook story time. Okay. The Sandy Hook school shooting was a big reformation for America. The incident is the deadliest mass shooting in Connecticut history, and it is the deadliest at an elementary school in U.S. history. The shooting prompted a renewed debate about gun control in the United States, including proposals to make a background check that is system universal now. Also, there was a new federal and state gun legislation that emerged after this incident that banned the sale and manufacture of certain semi-automatic firearms and magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition. It was the morning of December 14th in 2012 when Adam Lanza stalked his way down the halls of Sandy Hook Elementary School, with an AR-15, claiming the lives of 20 members in a school shooting that rocked the town of Newton, Connecticut forever. This is the case about children dying, so keep that in mind when you're listening to it. But today we're going to find out mostly about Adam. We will find out more about the students and what happened that day in part two, but we're going to find out a lot about what's been happening in the past 11 years, also today and in part two. This case is really hard for me. I cried the first time I heard my voice just cracked right now. My voice is cracking already.
You got this.
I cried the first time I saw reports about Sandy Hook, and I cried when I saw pictures of the children. I cried the first time I listened to another podcast cover it. Since then, I have listened in my lifetime to one single podcast cover this shooting. I normally listen to, like for example, Peter Kern. I've probably heard about 30 different podcasts cover that. It doesn't matter if I've listened to something five times. If another podcast that I like covers it, I'll listen to it. I have listened to one podcast ever cover Sandy Hook because I know as a person, I can't handle this. I know that I can't handle school shootings very well. It is my biggest thing that I'm not good with. I'm really bad with school shootings, but also I'm really bad with children death, and I'm really bad with mass children death. So altogether, obviously, this case is extremely hard on me as a person. However, someone requested this, and then when I told them about how hard this was for me, and they asked, "Oh, well, like, have you gotten over crying about it?" I was like, I cried twice while writing part one of the outline. They were like, "Oh my God, please don't say that I requested it." They said, "Please don't put my name." I said, "That I won't." Okay,
you know who you are.
Yeah. So, I won't. Total, all in all, while writing part one and part two, I cried 13 times while writing this. To give you an example, I am going to try not to cry tonight. We'll see. Part two is definitely going to be a lot harder because I do talk about the victims a lot. And it's just because children's cases are really hard and you also dig a lot into them. And when you dig into research, you create a bond with the victims sometimes. And like you look at the pictures of these kids, you read these obituaries, you see these videos, you hear the parents and the loved ones talking about them. It breaks you down. It really does. I know you guys can hear it a little bit more in my voice tonight. But here's for hoping. Let's get through part one.
You can do it.
Yeah. I feel like since this part is more about Adam Lanza, I can handle it. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really nervous, though. In part two, I talk about each child for a few sentences and I talk about them. And part two will be rough for all of us. You ready? I used so many sources, but I read that thing that I talked about. It's 114 pages. It was a report that's issued by the Office of the Child Advocate for the State of Connecticut. It's published in November of 2014. It starts by saying it was focusing on Adam Lanza and the review of the circumstances that predated his commission of mass murder at Sandy Hook Elementary School. They say they looked for warning signs, red flags, or other lessons that could be learned from a review of his life and found some things that were bullet points to the bigger picture, but not entirely of what could be blamed. They discussed the examination also of gun safety, public health, access to weaponry, the developmental trajectory and issues of mental illnesses in Adam's life, plus everything in between. On one of the first few pages, there's a bolded quote that states, "There can be no direct line drawn between one entity or a person's actions and a mass murder." They say there is no way they can completely answer why this happened, but they're trying to break down the events to prevent similar cases of happening again. Now, who was Adam Lanza and what do we know about him, his childhood, and his life? I'm going to go step by step in Adam's life and break down a lot of what they think maybe could have been a bit of a pattern or situations that were created in Adam's life to make him become the monster that he was, that ultimately ended in his own life being taken, as well as multiple others. I'm in no way supporting him or the reasonings of his actions, And I want to present this from the same angle that the report did so you guys can understand their findings. But they kind of do it in a way that they are just neutral. And they're doing it so that they can try to find where you could make a change and how these changes have been affected and made changes afterwards. So just keep that in mind. Adam was born on April 22nd, 1992 in Exeter, New Hampshire, to Nancy Lanza and Peter Lanza. He had one brother, Ryan, who was 4 years older. According to his obituary, he was described as he loved Dance Dance Revolution and building computers. He was smart and an introspective young man. But I'm going to break down Adam a lot more than that. Nancy had a troubling pregnancy with Adam. She suffered from maternal hypoglycemia, hypotension, and decreased fetal movement. However, after a cesarean C-section, she was awarded with a happy, healthy, full-term baby. This only lasted a short term before the health issues began for Adam. At 8 days old, he was admitted to the hospital for an episode of apnea. In his early years, Adam was described as an extremely active child who would not sleep well, who avoided touching, and had early communicational problems. He was said to have made up his own language even. Adam Lanza had significant developmental challenges from early childhood, including communicational and sensory difficulties, socialization delays, and repetitive behaviors. He was seen by the New Hampshire Birth to Three Intervention Program when he was almost 3 years old and referred by Special Education Preschool Services. It wasn't all bad, though. They said Adam had a really good attention span, creative play skills, and could easily follow directions.
I mean, kindergarten, you know, we're all there.
Well, not me. Remember, I couldn't build blocks. So actually, no.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In 1998, the Lanza family moved to Connecticut, and the family started changing. The marriage between the parents was strained. Mr. Lanza was working too much. He called himself a weekend father. It was that kind of family dynamic where, like, he worked all week, and then in the weekend, he was really present, and he would play with the kids and hang out with them and stuff. But then during the week, you know, he went to work, and then he would, you know, eat dinner with the family, but then he wanted to, you know, be by himself. And around that time, Adam was developing, like, a little more into like a socialist person. Like he wasn't socializing with anyone. He already was avoiding socialization, but now it's getting even worse. Growing up, the Newton Public Schools provided special education services to Adam when he was in elementary school, but their services were extremely limited at that time because this again was the early 90s. His social and emotional challenges increased after fourth grade. Adam suffered from severe anxiety, which began to further impact his ability to attend school. And in eighth grade, he was placed on homebound status through his educational plan, a placement for children that are too disabled, even with supports and accommodations, to attend school, they say. There were early indications of Adam's preoccupations with violence that were depicted by extremely graphic writings that appeared to have been largely unaddressed by schools and possibly by the parents.
Sounds about right. So, I mean, he's like eighth grade. So he's like 13.
Probably. Yeah, I would say so. Because ninth grade, you're 14, 15.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
In 2005, Adam was in eighth grade when his mom took him to the emergency room of Danbury Hospital for a crisis evaluation. She described Adam as having a borderline autism in the past, but she said he had since outgrown it. She reported that Adam was having trouble in school, trouble in groups, and exhibiting repetitive behaviors, which had gotten worse in recent days. The parents believed that Adam wasn't on drugs, he wasn't homicidal, and he wasn't suicidal. So at this point, the hospital records described him as anxious, withdrawn, and had a hesitant to be touched. He was just simply agitated, hypervigilant, and overwhelmed with fear. The clinical consultation resulted as a diagnosis of an anxiety disorder with him. Nancy said this attempt of taking him into the emergency room was to be able to get him a medical permission to allow Adam to stay at home instead of going to school at time, because she thought that would be easier to deal with him. Some of these compulsive problems that she said that she was having with him was things like repetitive hand washing, to the point where he was having exteriorated areas on his hands where he was having to be prescribed like things essentially like Aquaphor or like petroleum jellies on his skin, or things like shirt pulling. I also mentioned how he really liked playing DDR, you know, in his obituary. It was to the point where he would stand around and play DDR so much that he would play it till he had absolute exhaustion, and people around town called him the DDR guy.
Did you play it?
DDR?
Yeah.
I played it like a few times.
Yeah, I had it for sure and I enjoyed it. But that's when Sandstorm became so incredibly popular.
Is Sandstorm a song?
Yeah.
Oh, the only thing I really think about when I think of DDR is two things. I think of Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen when Lindsay Lohan and Megan Fox dance to it. And I think of Jacob Elordi in The Kissing Booth and how the two characters, Joey King and that Jacob Elordi's little brother, danced to DDR in the Kissing Booth movies. I'm sure there's a ton of other movies that do it, but those two do it.
What? Really?
Oh, this was in a rave movie, though. A Midsummer's Night rave. It was a rave that was themed like the Midsummer's Night Dream. And everyone gets drugged and dies slowly one at a time.
It was Puck. That's how you know Sandstorm. Not how everyone else does. By DDR.
No.
Okay.
That's weird.
Yeah, a little bit. I worry about you sometimes.
I worry about me all the time. That's interesting. I was going to talk about a different part of that paragraph. Did you ever get prescribed anything? Do you have dry skin problems?
No, I only have eczema on my elbows.
I have OCD and my siblings have like OCD and we all have dry skin also. And my mom didn't want to take us to the doctors when we were younger. And we had not only like repetitive hand washing problems because of our OCD and like germaphobe problems, but we all also had really dry skin on our hands. And my mom and I were talking about it the other day, actually. She used to not want to take us to the doctors for it, but we had really dry skin. My mom would put petroleum jelly on our hands and feet, and then she would duct tape socks and oven mitts to our hands and make us go to bed.
Yep.
And then she'd be like, "You can't touch those." And we're like, "Okay, we won't." We did. All the time. We helped each other. Yeah. But I was bullied. That was the biggest thing I was ever bullied for growing up, was I had such dry skin on my hands. And when you were a little kid at the playground, you had to hold hands to go inside.
Yep.
And this really, really mean boy, I'm going to say his name because screw him, he was that mean. His name was Andrew Alexander. And he held my hand one time and he called me alligator skin for the next 3 years. People called me alligator kid.
Do you know how people feel like you're now
a reptilian? And now I'm a reptilian. But yeah. He told everyone I was an alligator. And it was so mean. I was like, I can't help it. And now I'm a reptilian.
And now we're here.
But yeah, I don't know what that song is, the Sandstorm either.
I can't with you.
Going back to this, Adam went to the doctor for numerous visits where he was deemed, and I'm using like, you know, like air quotes, sick, because he had a sore throat, difficulty breathing, and he was not eating well, not sleeping well, or he was sleeping mostly only during the daytime, and he had weight loss. Now, there was no documented blood work or any other evaluations to examine any of these things, though. Some of those you can usually see physically, like you can deem, you know, if someone has weight loss, maybe, or you can deem, you know, like if someone's sleeping during the day, like you can just physically see them sleeping. But some of that you should probably test.
I mean, you should just always test
that too. Adam had several sessions with a community psychiatrist between the ages of 13 and 15. Though there were no medical records regarding this physician's treatment. At the age of 14, Adam was part of the Yale Child Study Center, where he was observed and they recommended his withdrawal from school along with his mother's wishes And at this point, it was starting to create a bit of an isolational pattern for Adam instead of actually addressing his needs. And you'll see this start to like become a thing as they think that maybe isolation is a good thing. They haven't decided whether or not isolation is going to help or hinder Adam. After years of meeting with the Yale Child Study Center interviewers, one of them told Nancy what they said to Adam once during a session. They said, "I told him he's living in a box right now, and that box will only get smaller over time if he doesn't get some treatment." The medical records reflect repeated references of diagnoses for different autism spectrum disorders, anxiety, or obsessive-compulsive disorders. However, Adam shows a resistance to wanting treatment for medications with his issues. Adam also becomes diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome around this time, and he argues this wasn't the case of what was happening with him. In 10th grade, Adam starts to return to school because it seemed like he was starting to make some progress. The fellow teachers and students exchanged some emails and communications about Adam's return, and a lot of them seemed really positive and hopeful for this. They were prepared to make the transition as easy for him in like almost any way they could. One of the school district members outlined some tips about Adam in an email. They said, "In my past experience, observing a class is more difficult than participating in a class. As for your other students, when in doubt, ignore Adam. Any attention is tough. In terms of prepping them, just think about what you know about Adam. No loud noises, no strong smells, no sudden movements, no unpredictable actions, noises, smells, etc. Speak with a purpose or let me work. Adam Lanza may be uncomfortable around the boys, but I don't know that for sure." So they actually were like really trying. And like when you see some of the other emails, because there were a few that they have in the documents. One of the other teachers was like, "Oh, does he have issues? You know, if I have my studies as I normally do, can I do lectures or something like that? Like, can he sit still for lectures?" They were asking logical questions about what they could and couldn't do to make changes, to make things as seamlessly as a transition. It seemed like everyone wanted to make this a good thing for him, like as if he was 100% welcomed back.
It's crazy too to think about, like, this is the same exact time frame for us.
Yeah.
Like we're in the same grade.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, I don't know, I'm just thinking about like if there was a kid that came to school in eighth grade and then all of a sudden he's gone and then all of a sudden he's back.
I could imagine the teachers, as long as there was an open line of communication, like I feel like students. It could happen.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm sure that is very hard on the teachers. And it seems like he was coming in the middle of the year, which probably makes it also a little bit harder.
Yeah.
And since he's been gone, you don't know where he left off. And it seems like there was a lot more to this situation. Well, for Adam, though, returning to school didn't last long. That spring, he went back to almost an entirely homeschooled setting. He went back into isolation and he just started seeing tutors again. Adam's parents appeared to conceptualize him as an intellectually gifted person because they almost like thought that the way the school catered to his curricular needs by like having him homeschooled with these like special tutors meant that he was gifted. The school was like kind of like, "No, we're doing it because you need it." Mm-hmm. So they were like saying like, "Hey, no, we're testing him and his performance in the school district is actually proving that he's just average." So they said the psychological testing performance done in the school district of a high school level indicates his cognitive abilities are only average. Around 2008, Adam's family decided to stop seeking medical treatment for him, and his educational and medical records ended around 2006. It was only Adam's pediatric records up to 17 years old that were noting his obsessive compulsive behaviors and other issues that he had been battling, because once he hits around like 18, they just end. His adult medical records did not reflect any awareness or diagnosis of ongoing mental health issues. Adam progressively deteriorated in the last few years of his life. And eventually living in the real life had social isolation that definitely probably played a big part of what happened before the incident. His parents ended up divorcing in 2009 and he stopped communicating with his father in 2010. And he didn't reply to his father's numerous emails that Mr. Lanza was sending between 2010 and 2012, which were often just seeking any time to spend with Adam. And I'm talking like Mr. Lanza went out of his way. He knew that he wasn't getting responses, but he would just be like, oh, hey, Adam, if you want to go to this event, like, OK, so his whole family was into like guns and stuff like that. And they did like gun shows and they did events and stuff, or even just something like, I think one time his dad invited him to like a rock show, not like a not rock music, like a
like geodes.
Yes. I was trying to think like a rock and pebble show. OK, yeah. Like rocks you find outside. He's like, hey, geodes. There's a rock and pebble show. Do you want to go to it? Knowing that Adam won't even reply to the emails, but he's like, it's better than Adam feeling like no one cares to even reach out. That's what how Mr. Lanza saw it. He's like, I would rather try reaching out and getting no reply than at least no one reaching out to him. But Adam was to the point where he was using emails to communicate with his own mother. And it was also to the point where he wouldn't allow her into his bedroom, his own mother, who he lived with. He didn't pay rent. He didn't like have a reason why she wasn't allowed. She just was not allowed in his room. Adam was fixated on things super obsessively still, but this time his like fixations had started changing. He was fixated on things such as mass murder. He was part of a cyber community of mass murder enthusiasts who he was in email communications with on the daily basis. There were posts where he would mention his fixations and obsessions and credits them to the enthusiasm he had back during the Virginia Tech shooting. The FBI Behavioral Analysis Unit determined that after an exhaustive forensic review of Adam's computer usage, that his obsession and attention to detail with mass killing was unprecedented. When you read through his communications during this point in his life, you'll see a pattern of depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, and obsessive compulsive disorder. But it did not suggest the presence of psychosis, which is the loss of contact with reality. So he's
aware
of what he's doing. He's just not in a good place is the best way to say it, I think. Now, that's not the only tie that Adam has with some like negative things going on. Like I said, he was really passionate, him and his family, with recreational shooting. So him and his parents did that. Like it was a hobby that he hadn't been doing as much of as he got older. When he was younger, his parents would take him to shooting ranges and stuff like that. So he knew how to shoot. His mom had like gun cabinets in the house, things like that. She owned guns and, you know, things like that. But it didn't seem like he was willing to go do it lately, because it seemed like Adam was unwilling to do any activity that required leaving the house in the final year of his life. He wouldn't leave the home for anything. And that wasn't the only big, weird last thing of his life. Adam was anorexic. Do you remember when I said when he was younger, he lost some weight? No, like he lost a lot of weight. When Adam is found and when Adam dies, okay, in the end, when Adam's dead and he's found, he was 6 foot tall and he weighs 112 pounds.
Tiny.
Try to put that into perspective.
Yeah.
6 foot tall and 112 pounds.
How he's not like institutionalized, I don't understand.
When you see pictures of him, it makes sense. And I'm not trying to be mean, but he looks emaciated. He looks
sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Kylie, you look sick right now.
I'm cold. Leave me alone.
I looked over and Kylie is like hood up. She's wrapped in a little blankie, like a little Eskimo. You gonna make it over there, kid?
No, I'm cold.
Around 2012, Nancy had begun planning to potentially move out of Sandy Hook, and that would have been out of Adam's childhood home, which some psychologists theorize this could have stimulated the fears of leaving the comfort zone for Adam, because Adam already does have some mental health issues, as we have discussed. And this is a big one for some people, is leaving the idea of your comfort zone.
It can go like one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's either really bad or really good.
And they were nervous that this could have been what put his plan into motion that day in December, because it wasn't right. It was right before this that Nancy had started kind of having that talk and concept with Adam. Now, there were three. I'm still talking about the report, by the way, guys. I'm not even done with this 114 page report. There were three really powerful quotes that I want to share with you. OK, part one, or quote one. This report suggests the role that weaknesses and lapses in the educational and healthcare systems, response and untreated mental illnesses played in Adam Lanza's deterioration. No direct line of causation can be drawn from these to the horrific mass murder at Sandy Hook. Okay. So they're saying, like, yes, there are a bunch of issues, but
there were lapses of education and healthcare.
Yeah. They're not the only problems. Okay. So, like I said in the very beginning, like, yes, they are part of the problem, but they are not the root of the problem. There is more to it, clearly. Okay. So as much as we want to blame them, they're not the only problems. This is a layered problem. Okay. It's like an ogre. There's layers. It's onion. There's layers. I like fucked up the quote. Ogres are like onions. Okay. Number two, there is no way to adequately explain why Adam was obsessed with mass shootings and how or why he came to act on this obsession. In the end, only he and he alone bears responsibility for this monstrous act. And number three, his severe and deteriorating internalized mental health problems combined with an atypical preoccupation with violence and access to deadly weapons proved a recipe for mass murder.
They were readily available to him.
Yeah.
All of the information was readily available to him, and like obsessive, like,
I feel like that one, that sentence following sentence one explains it almost better. Like, it's like, hey, you can't pinpoint one thing, but then sentence three is like, you're right, you can pinpoint one thing. But if I have to use an opinion, I think there's a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little bit of this. And in the end, that really is what kind of happened. The final weeks of Adam's life were very bleak. He was living alone in his room. And I'm not trying to sympathize here, you guys. That's not what this whole thing is. I know it seems like I kind of did that here and I made you feel sorry for him. That is not the goal here. That is not the goal, because I want you to see maybe how this incident occurred so that it doesn't occur again type thing. We know that things happen, but we want to know why they occur. Okay. So the final weeks of Adam's life were bleak. He was living alone in his room with black plastic garbage bags over the windows, making sure no light could come in. He had a locked door. He had no communications with outside people except through a computer on purpose, not even with his own mother, whom he lived with. I mentioned he was in these forums, which is his only communications, where he's discussing shared views of murder and such for fun. And just to give you an example of how he talks, I'm going to have Kylie read a pretty decently long email, but it's an email he sent to another member just to give you the kind of mindset and have him show you how he talks to people.
All right. So the date is December 11th, 2012, 9:56 p.m. And that's like X'd out. I didn't really look at the emails you sent earlier, so I guess I ought to respond now. About the Chinese mass stabbers, they blend together in my mind too much for me to say much. Although I guess that should make it even easier to talk about them. ... I don't know. Who am I to even say anything on the topic? The inexplicable mystery to me isn't how there are massacres, but rather how there aren't 100,000 of them every year. So when it comes to rates and such, causes and consequences, domestic or forging, in whatever context, I'm just going to be completely making things up because I apparently don't understand any of it. I'm clueless about Olga Hepnarova. While granting that modus operandi really isn't that important, I just can't get into vehicular slaughterers. It seemed too mediated, like using remote explosives, too hot. And knives stray too far from the whole, air quote, mass aspect, too cold. The aesthetic of pistols tends to be just sick, right? A list of mass shooter suicide notes, .. I never thought to compile such a thing before. I can't remember even thinking. quote, whoa, that guy had a suicide note. I'm just finding out about this. If their existence is every sick divulged by the police, it tends to be pretty public knowledge. And if their contents are released, they're even more prominent. So I'm probably not privy to any information that you aren't already well aware of. All I can offer is to say that you can probably rest easy knowing that you aren't overlooking too many lurking jivalries. As far as the homies go, well, the gif, the dot gif of him dancing on a llama was cute. I guess that's all I can say about the whole homie thing, since I can't really relate to it. I don't understand why there aren't the, quote, he's just a poor misunderstood puppy who needs help, unquote. Flocking around Jared Loughner, since that spiel ostensibly applied to him more than James Holmes. And speaking more generally, I don't really understand why Aurora shooting was considered such a big deal all around, as if such a thing had never happened before. It's not like it's 1984.
Jesus, this dude.
It's it's written. I probably didn't read it very well. I'm sorry, guys. I'm
but
still,
okay.
Yeah, but it's very like obsessive. Like it's very like I know a lot about this, and I'm speaking in a sense that I'm like.
Well,
speaking about it being like, I know a lot about this,
but it's also just the thing where he's just like, I don't know if it were me. I don't like remote explosives. Those are just like meh. And like knives are kind of boring, but like pistols. No pistols. Those are just right. You know, I'm Goldilocksing this. And like the way he talks about it, he's like, I can't get into vehicular manslaughter. Those bore me. Like what? I don't know. You guys like talking about vehicular manslaughter. I don't know. Not my jive here. And also the Aurora shooting. That's so 1984. I'm more into the Virginia Tech shooting. Like that was such a wicked massacre. Bro, you didn't like that one. There were so many brains and guts on the wall. Like, I feel like that's yeah. how this fucking douchebag talks. So 2 or 3 days prior to the shooting of Sandy Hook, Adam sustained an injury to his head. So he sustains an injury to his head and he texted his mother. Bloody, bloody, bloody. But remember, he also has like communicational issues. So maybe he's just explaining to her how bad the injury is.
Right.
Well, Nancy was planning a trip out of town to New Hampshire. And so she went through with her plans and continued them. So she leaves town. While Nancy was gone on December 13th, Adam's GPS tracked him going to and from somewhere really close to the Sandy Hook Elementary School area, which is odd. Because maybe he didn't go to Sandy Hook Elementary School. That's totally, maybe he didn't. Maybe he just drove somewhere near there. But you guys, he hasn't left his house in like almost a year. Well, the GPS starts around 2:09 and it ends at 2:32. And it's one of the first times Adam had left the house in months. So the authorities do later wonder if this was maybe him planning something out, like wondering him looking, because that's around the time kids maybe are getting out of school. Was this him wondering, looking at how many students were in the school, him wondering how long it would take him to get to the school, something. So they thought that maybe this was him planning.
I almost feel like it was him like just going out in the world and then realizing it then, like, you know, like I'm almost thinking of like a movie in my head where you're going out and then realizing that, oh, like there's a school here. Oh, there's kids here. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a realization. It's not a...
Like, maybe he didn't have the plan to do the shooting, but he planned he was going to go out. And then he's like, fuck.
But then he has all of this knowledge of mass murders and plannings and, yeah. and all of that. And
it starts
and
then to connect like, dots.
Yeah, he starts to think of it. And yeah, and then he sees the school and he's like, oh, and then puts them together.
In like, not the correct connecting dots way you want it to happen.
Right. Not like normal people are like, oh, there's children getting out of school.
Nancy returned that night around 10 p.m. from her trip. That day, so the next day when the incident occurs, Adam was wearing black fatigues, yellow earplugs, black sunglasses, a black hat, and a green military vest. And he grabbed 3 guns from the house, a semi-automatic AR-15 assault rifle by Bushmaster, a Glock handgun, and a Sig Sauer handgun. Adam didn't start at the school, though. He first started in his own home at 36 Yaganda Street before 9:30 a.m. Adam shot and killed his 52-year-old mother, Nancy Lanza, 4 times in the head with the Savage Arms .22 bolt-action long rifle in the forehead.
That is a big gun.
Yep.
To shoot that close. Like,
I heard in just the one and only podcast I ever listened to, that is the only place I heard it. And she specifically said, I heard in one place. So I don't know how this is, if this is reliable. She said, I heard somewhere that there were burn marks on Nancy's forehead.
Yeah.
From some of the bullets being so close. I guarantee
it. Yeah.
So that sounds completely accurate, but I don't want to go 100% on record, but maybe. Nancy would later be found in her bedroom on the second floor of the home, still in bed with her pajamas on. A neighbor had reported hearing what he thought was gunshots that morning, but he really did think it was a hunter nearby in the woods because they live in an area where they have hunters nearby. And he thought maybe the hunter had just accidentally gotten a little bit too close, like outside of where they go, because it's happened in the past. And usually they catch themselves and they just get right back where they're supposed to be. So he's like, oh, you know, hunter got a little too close. He realized it, went back to his spot.
Well, too close.
There was a delivery driver that came to the Uganda Street address around 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. and he realized no one was home at the address. So he left a delivery form slip because no one was at the home of the Lanza family. Later, when authorities do make their way to the Lanza home, they'll find more damning evidence against Adam. They'll find a blue and white duffel bag containing 50 rounds of rifle ammo, some more ear protection, eye protection, binoculars, paper targets, and a certificate from the National Rifle Association that bears Adam Lanza's name. A lot of stuff was able to be recovered and examined in Adam's room, his computer room specifically, as well as his bedroom in the basement, because he had a computer room upstairs and the bedroom in the basement. One thing that was always really odd was Adam had a computer hard drive that was intentionally damaged, and authorities still to this day in 2023 have never been able to get into it. However, they were able to recover tons of stuff from this house. In the home, there were things like 1,600 rounds of ammunition. There were 10 knives, 3 samurai swords, a slew of other weaponry, a large amount of firearms. There was a gun safe. In Adam's room, they found an article from the New York Times from February 18th, 2008, that was about the shooting from the Northern Illinois University, as well as 3 pictures of what looked like dead bodies covered in blood wrapped in plastic. He also had a book of Amish Grace, How Forgiveness Transcended Tragedy. That was about the 2006 October shooting from an Amish school that killed 5 people. He also had copies of newspaper articles from 1891 about a shooting about children. He also had on his computer 2 videos of suicide by gunshots that showed everything, movies about mass shootings, and a computer game called School Shooting, which was a first-person perspective video game about a shooter's point of view about a school shooting, and you got extra points in the end if you killed yourself in the end.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen?
Mm-hmm. There was also images of Adam posing with rifles to his head, as well as pictures of him with guns, which I'll post one of them on the Instagram. There was a 5-second video dramatization of kids being shot with guns. And there was an image of Adam in full gear with his guns and ammunition. That's the exact one I'll post. There was also a spreadsheet of mass murders and serial killers. He also had a documentation for the prerequisites for mass murder. He also had different material about pedophiles and advocating for the right of pedophiles. However, everywhere in the world wants to state this, there was no pedophilia information or pedophilia content anywhere on his computer. I will say that. But then,
but he thought about it.
Well, no. He just,
knew about it.
Yeah, it was just like in that spreadsheet with the mass murders and serial killers. Almost like it kind of just like went hand in hand type thing, like with the people that he's associated with, if that kind of makes sense.
And advocating for their rights. Like that's where it's like, you knew. It's like an opinion.
I'll be honest. I kind of wonder if it's kind of that community, like it was like not a shared spreadsheet almost, but kind of that. I do wonder if it was more that.
Like a shared drive type of
thing. Yeah. Because I wouldn't be surprised if it was that. And maybe that's why. Because nothing else points to that.
Mm-hmm.
He's very weird, but nothing else points to that. So that's just a little unusual. But I don't want to say and be wrong. But that is just kind of unusual that there's not anything else. But then there's that. Unless that's what was on the hard drive. And that's maybe why. Who knows? Honestly, at this point, who knows? Well, up to that point, then Adam had shot and killed his mother, and then he prepared himself to make his way to the Sandy Hook Elementary School, where he stole his mother's car and started to drive there, where he's about to go down in history. And that's where I'll start part two.
Because it's a two-parter.
A two-parter. So I know we've only gone over part one. So like you still have a lot to learn about what happened that day. But I want to talk about how we feel about Adam thus far, because, you know, he obviously does something bad. Yeah. Clearly. But you also learn all this. Clearly, there were some issues. And I feel like Adam, his whole life just kept going under this radar. And I feel like he just kept getting pushed. Not like around, but like almost like they just didn't push him towards success.
They didn't care.
I feel like they were, instead of just solving the problem, they were like, oh well, it's not getting solved, so let's not try to solve it. They're like, oh, it would have been too much work to solve it, so let's just not. But there's so many chances you could have just done something different. And it does seem like he did kind of fight back at some points. Like he didn't seem like he wanted the medication and stuff. And I get that, but sometimes you do need to push them out of their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. There are times where I get it. If they don't want to be touched, they don't want to do this. And there is a person on TikTok where he is, I want to say in his 20s, and he's a nonverbal autism child. Mm-hmm. I guess you wouldn't call him a child. He's an adult now. He's a nonverbal autism adult. And he's in his 20s. I don't think he's ever spoke a word, they said, but he communicates through drawings, pictures, and signs, and he doesn't do well with touch unless he touches you first and stuff like that. But you know what? They manage.
Right.
He's not going around shooting up schools.
Right.
He's not going around doing things wrong, and he has problems. He has issues. He has things. But you know what? No one gave up on him. That's the thing. They tried. They worked around his problems. They found out what he does and doesn't like, what he can and can't cope with and stuff. This was a fucking child that you kept not caring about, and you kept just never giving a chance to, I feel like, and you never pushed him towards success. And then it hit a point where he was 17, and at that point he did become a lost cause, a fucking course. This person doesn't know what it's like to be a human at this point. You genuinely raised a fucking AI robot that fucking has a taste for destroying human flesh, and you're wondering why they want to go and shoot up a school. Are you fucking stupid? I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not blaming his mom, but like at the same time,
I am.
There's
100% neglect. Like you cannot. Like you cannot get around it. Like. She would have been able to see what he was doing in the locked door. Like she would have been able to, you know, make sure that he was being taken care of and, you know, eating. And
I do feel bad, though. She got killed, too.
I don't give a fuck that she got killed. There was serious neglect. Like.
So tell me how you, Kylie, tell me how
it
you
goes
feel.
Back to the. Hold on. Let me find the quote. Where is it? This report suggests the role that weaknesses and lapses in the educational and healthcare systems response and untreated mental illness played. Like, there were lapses of education and healthcare in this young boy's life that would have been detrimental to things that would have been normalcy in any other person's life. Like how he is not institutionalized for all of these things that he is like going through is insane to me. Like, how are you allowing your son to be 112 pounds? It's neglecting. That's my view.
It's a hard situation because I want to feel bad for Adam because obviously a lot happened here to him, but I don't want to feel bad for Adam because of what he does.
Yeah.
So that sucks because I wanted him to get the help. Everyone deserves a chance, but what he does makes him not deserve that because he ruined that chance for himself.
But do you think that he would have had
done this if he had that chance? I don't know.
I don't think he would have because it would have been.
He could have maybe changed.
It would have been more of a watchful eye.
Okay, wait. But what if he was so obsessed with murder and everything? Okay. maybe it wasn't a school he shot up. What if he then instead goes and he gets married and he becomes Oscar Pistorius and he fucking stabs his girlfriend to death?
Or maybe
because she raises her voice at him.
Or maybe he just becomes a gamer and plays Grand Theft Auto. Like, you know.
Or he becomes a psycho gamer that then fucking murders someone because they say, fuck you,
go
jackass.
Kill yourself. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you don't know what could set this kid off.
Yeah.
He could be clean and sober and great for 10 years and then one thing sets him off.
Yeah.
A person honks at him in a red light and he gets out of his car and beats the person's face in for no reason. That's the fucking thing. I don't know if Adam Lanza could have been normal, but we didn't give him the chance to. But
I mean, if we could have, though, but he's 112 fucking pounds. The only way that he's going to hurt anybody is by a gun, is by a weapon.
Which, that's another thing. Why did she allow him, if he had an obsession with murder and mass suicides and stuff, why was she taking him to a fucking gun range and leaving weapons around on the house?
Did she know that? Like, did she know that that was his obsession? That was his, like...
I mean, it's noted in his files and stuff, so didn't she know?
I don't feel like she knew. I feel like it was neglect. Like, she just didn't care enough to know what he was doing.
I don't know. You, depending on how much you guys want to dive also, you can read some of the emails back and forth between him and his mom.
I feel like the emails are a scapegoat and she admitted defeat.
Maybe. But I will say, like, she did at times try to maybe still socialize with Adam and at least boost him, it seemed like, and have that communicational line with him. And she tried to, it seemed like, neutralize some of the Adam issues.
Yeah, but like in a parental role or...
But
I mean,
also,
not all parents,
I'm sorry,
but
there's no fucking way my mom would have been cool with me being like,
exactly.
Hey, I call my mom Lorraine, by the way. I call my mom her first name. There's no fucking, which some people might have beef with, but it's my own thing. There's no fucking way I would have been like, hey, Lorraine, I'm done talking to you. I'm just going to fucking text you from the next room, or I'm going to email you from the next room, Lorraine, because I'm not going to fucking talk to you face to face, even though we live in the same fucking house. I get it. They lived in a big house. They did. And he had a basement room. So maybe, you know, once in a while, because he's like, oh, mom, you know, I'm 112 pounds. I'm skinny. I don't feel good. I don't want to walk all the way upstairs if I only am telling you, you know, something really small, like, hey, I'm not coming up for dinner tonight because I'm not feeling well. I have a headache. Maybe that night he won't. You don't need to fucking every day communicate through your mother with fucking emails.
Yeah.
The next day you fucking go upstairs, tell your mom, hi, sorry, I had a fucking headache last night. That's why I texted you saying I'm not coming up for dinner. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, if anyone wonders why I call my mom Lorraine, I call my mom Lorraine. I didn't do that until I got older. I started calling my mom Lorraine, and it's strictly for smart purposes. I go places with my mom often, and my mom is extremely hard of hearing. She's like 95.9% deaf. And if I go anywhere and I yell mom, she already can't hear shit. And if I yell mom, every bitch in that room turns and looks at me. So there's no fucking way I'm doing that. And my mom wanders off like there's no goddamn fucking tomorrow. So there's no way I'm doing that. So I've just gotten used to the point of calling my mom by her first name. And I call her Lorraine all the time because it's easier on me. And because I introduce
everyone
her
else.
To everyone. Yeah. So whenever I go places, it's easier. Like, we'll be in TJ Maxx and I can just say, hey, Lorraine, look at this. Hey, Lorraine. Oh, hey, Lorraine. And it's just easier on everyone. So I call my mom Lorraine. But it's really funny because when I introduce people to my mom and we look absolutely nothing alike. It was this whole funny thing this week and we were all talking about it. We don't even look the same nationality.
No.
And so when I call her Lorraine, nonetheless, and I'll be like, blah, blah, and this is Lorraine. My mom, Lorraine. And then I continue the conversation. I call her Lorraine. People are like, is Athena adopted?
You and wonder why people think that. Like,
so that's all. If you guys want to hear that fun story. So this is our Adam Lanza pretty much part one. But we're still going to call him Sandy Hook part one and part two, just because it is part one and part two of it. Next week, we'll really, really get into the nitty gritty and we'll try and hold our shit together. We'll see if it happens. And hopefully Kylie won't be hacking up along next week. We'll see, though.
Yeah.
No promises.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you once again for listening to this week's case. It's two-parter. So we'll see you part two next week. Two-parter. Feel free to tell us how you guys feel as well.
Thank you for joining us after dark. We can't wait to chat with you next week for another new episode. Sleep tight.
Hey, listen. listener, did you have some feedback about this week's case? Or maybe you want to chat with us. Maybe you even have a suggestion you'd like to throw our way. We're always just a click away. You can easily find all of our socials on Linktree through Cryptic Soup Pod, which is available in our Instagram bio. You can also join the CSP Discord, where we would love to chat with you.
Thank you for joining us this week, and make sure to check out our sources available in the description if you want to dive deeper into this case. Don't forget to show your support and love for CSP by leaving a review and rating wherever you normally listen. Next week, we will be back with a new episode where you can join in on the conversation after dark.
Cryptic Soup Pod is a podcast that contains sensitive material at times. We understand if sometimes the subjects are too much for some of the listeners. We thank each and every one of you for being a member of the community and always supporting us. Thank you for everything, and we'll see you next time. So stay tuned.
You skipped a whole paragraph, by the way.
Adam went in for the doctor's numerous.
We'll try again.
Yeah, I do.
I think we'd be very strict parents.
Yeah, I'm going to become a helicopter. I'm a helicopter to cow, let alone a helicopter to a child.
I don't think I'd be a helicopter, but I would. I'm a very strict leader in general. And so I know that that would be like portrayed in my like parental.
Well, I run a true crime podcast, so I'm going to be a fucking helicopter.
That's fair.
I'm going to run a background check if my child ever has a friend. No fuck on the parents, the child, their great aunt, their sister, like, the teacher, the school.
It's a fucking 10-year-old.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to need.
Little
are you
Susie May over here?
Susie May. Susie May Jackson. Are you sure Jackson was the only last name you've ever had? Give me every address you've ever had. Susie May Jackson.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.